So, hello and welcome everyone to our special focus Recovery from Relapse OA meeting. Today is Tuesday, the 1st of July, and our speaker is Rachel B. Rachel is a Londoner and first came to OA around 30 years ago. Rachel, we look forward to hearing your story.
Thank you. So yeah, my name's Rachel. I'm a compulsive overeater. And as you can hear, I've been in the rooms for a very, very long time. And just to say that I so qualify for for sharing on recovery from relapse, my current length of abstinence is about 3.5 years, something over 3.5 years. So it, as they say, you do the maths. But one day at a time, I have been abstinent for the past 3.5 years. It definitely hasn't always been like that. So because of the specific focus of this group, I thought I'm actually going to focus on really on my journey up and down and up and down in this room, in these rooms. I also just wanted to say that I'm also so pleased that this meeting is here because for a very, very long time I was so ashamed of relapse. I thought that absolutely everybody else came into the room as they got abstinent. That was it. Bish bash bosh. Done. And I was this complete failure. And I never shared about that. I was always going to give like really positive shares. And then over the years, I've come to realize that actually there are some people like that. And I've written a lot of step 10s about it and about people seem to lose weight easily. But that hasn't been my journey. It just hasn't. But have I recovered for today? Yes. Have I had a spiritual awakening? Yes. So I feel like actually, yeah. This is my journey. And all of that kind of wishing that I had somebody else's recovery was really unhelpful, to say the least. So, a bit about how I got into the rooms in the first place. I've always been a compulsive overeater. I absolutely cannot remember a time when food wasn't really, really important to me. Right from when I was a young baby, I had a lactose intolerance. As a baby. So when I was weaned, unfortunately, I was inadvertently started simply because I was getting very, very ill from milk and nobody could identify. I'm 64 in those days, people just didn't really know about lactose intolerance, which was, that was just what the really, really bad luck. So I kind of started off right from the beginning, with weird things going on with my food. I also come from a family of addicts, particularly around food. So in a sense, I kind of didn't have a chance there, really. The very first thing I can remember is being told off because I was too fat. I was about 5. It was actually by a teacher who, again, bless her heart, she was making a joke. I didn't take it as a joke because even at that young age, I knew that if there was one really awful thing to be in this world, it was fat and to eat too much. And that was like kind of the ultimate sin. So I had a lifetime of that right from the get-go, and I found life very confusing, very bewildering. My family was very loving, but pretty dysfunctional. And a lot of, I'm not going to go into exactly, there's so many different ways of being dysfunctional. But my response to all of that, which I suppose is the thing that kind of is relevant to recovery, my response to that was to use food and to retreat. I spent an awful lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of emotion building up a wall of I'm okay, I'm nice, I'm fine, I'm lovely, everything's great. It took an awful lot of energy to build that up and to keep it up. And I also experienced as time went on, my mental health really broke down, but I was very, very good at disguising it. So at one point, in fact, actually one point in my quite early childhood, I had a psychotic episode for a few weeks. And honestly, virtually nobody noticed because my paranoia was such, I just kind of went dumb. But my family, they were distracted. They were distracted, bless them. And they didn't notice because I was very good at functioning. But the thing that I used, and this is the thing that it actually took me so many years to really cotton on to this, food was not my problem. Food was my solution. And the really awful thing is it worked. It worked because it kept me numb, it kept me quiet, it kept me silent, it kept me from, it felt like I was always going to burst out at any minute. And I needed this robot to act on my behalf, as it were. And the difference between me and this robot got further and further apart. From and externally, I was doing quite well. I was academic. I did well in school. Never had any friends, but I always just assumed that's because I was an odd kid, which I suppose it probably was in a way. I was also subject to really horrible, horrible bullying, which was all centered around my weight. And I'd love to say I think don't think that happens anymore. I think it does, but I also know that in the 1960s and early 70s, it wasn't seen in the same way. And the solution to that was presented to me about, if you're being really bullied, well, the solution is then for you to lose weight so that you fit in. So I started going on diets. My family put me on diets, three generations of us going to the pay and weighs from when I was about eight. And that started the journey of going up and down, up and down. And up and down, and it got more and more, and I have to say, I was always really, really good at dieting. I loved dieting. I don't describe myself as an anorexic, but because for me, what dieting did was I'd hold it in and hold it in and hold it in. And it first of all, it was spectacular because I never very seldom seem to do anything by half. So if I do a diet, somebody tells me, suggests to me a really or pretty recovery anyway, a sensible way of eating, I say, that's a really sensible way of eating. I know I'll eat half of that. Because that's kind of how I was, and I'll do it much more quickly. And I loved that feeling of drama when people kind of go, "Oh, you've lost so much weight. That's amazing." I really got off on that, and that to me gave me a huge high. I think it's because I couldn't keep it up. I'd get down to a goal weight that, to be honest, was frequently actually probably too low for me anyway. I'm not a naturally very slender person. I'm kind of ordinary. But I would want to go, whatever it was, I wanted to go to the extremes. I get down there, stay down there for a few minutes, get all the plaudits, and then immediately it's like, oh, fine, now I can eat what I called normally. And this was the interesting thing. I called it normally because what I didn't realize was spectacular binges are not normal. It is not normal to order, as I got older, Chinese meals, for example. Oh, I'm not sure if we're allowed to mention food, but anyway, very, very large takeaways designed for multiple people. Somehow kid myself this was going to be a bit cheaper because I was going to eat it next day. I mean, I can't remember exactly how I absolutely managed to justify it, but it all went. Sort of pretending to the delivery boy. In those days, you had to phone up for a delivery. We didn't have the internet. And actually sort of pretending there were other people in the house. There's a bit in the beginning of step two of our 12 and 12, where it lists all the different kinds of behaviors that we've done. Eating food out of the bin, eating frozen food, eating food that was off. I loved eating food that was off because I hoped it was going to make me ill. Now, seriously, how sick is that? But that was absolutely what I hoped. I prayed for an illness that would make me slim and allow me to eat. I didn't actually want to stop eating because I needed that numbness. And I so, and it was like, it was my friend. So things were really, inside, I was like completely crumbling, but outside everything looked good. Outside, apart from the fact I went up and down the scale quite a lot, but somehow that was normalized, particularly the bits where I went down the scale. So I went to a university, which actually was really fab. I met a bloke there. We got married. We got a house. I got a job. Again, all looks fantastic, but it started to crumble because it was just so not me. It just wasn't something was deeply, deeply, deeply missing. The other thing actually is that I absolutely hated myself, really, really hated myself. And so, which also just fueled all this craziness. And because the more I failed as a dieter, the more and it was all hinged on that, the more I hated myself because I just couldn't seem to get it like other people could, just couldn't. So that carried on into my mid-20s, and then I found therapy, and that again, I thought, fantastic, that's it. It's my psyche. I, discovered that it was all my parents' fault, which it really wasn't. So that was great. I had somebody to blame, and I can remember going to seeing these really lovely women, and I can remember one in particular was trying to point out to me that I had an eating disorder. I so wasn't going to hear that. Absolutely wasn't going to hear that. And I had a ritual because the feelings would come up. I couldn't cope. I would go to my favorite coffee shop and there would be another binge. So I was never able to take advantage of what was on offer because I couldn't cope and I would always use food to kind of dumb it all down. Then in my kind of late 20s, my marriage fell apart and I came out as a lesbian. Hoorah! Who knew that? You see, that was the problem. That was the problem. It was my sexuality. I was eating my sexuality. So now everything was going to be fantastic because I found out what the problem was. Well, you know what? It did answer a lot of questions, to be fair. It really did. It did not stop me eating, though. However, I met a woman who I really liked. And it was interesting because I went to a meeting yesterday, and people we were talking about kind of like what you, other people had to, what have what you want, and I'd always sort of thought my partner is in a different fellowship, but evidently there was something that I wanted because I really really wanted to keep this relationship, but because she was in recovery in another fellowship, she wasn't prepared to put up with my complete emotional chaos and unavailability, and said so. And that was how I got into the room. So she 12-stepped me, and as I said, that was about 30 years ago. She's in the next room, also trying to keep cool. We've brought up a child. We're still together after all these years. So that bit worked, and that was how I got into recovery. And then, again, being somebody who likes to throw herself into things hugely, I threw myself into recovery. I really do recommend that. That actually was really kind of worked for me. I found a sponsor fairly quickly, mostly because I thought he had a great sense of humor. He was wonderful, actually. He was very fond memories. And his message to me was, do the steps, do them quickly, you can always do them again. And that worked for me. It really did. So I did the steps. I did not, he was, I remember him encouraging me to do the step four, the big book way, but I couldn't do it the big book way because I said, I'm a really nice person. I don't have any resentments. So there's not much point in me doing it like that. And he was deciding that recovery way. And said, okay, and we found a way through it. And I did what I was able to do, and it really helped. And I did what I did the first time was I did step nine, went right up to step nine, did my step nine amends. And that was amazing because that was where I kind of, that was where I did a lot of healing around my family, particularly around my brother, who I bullied unmercilessly as a child because, he was the lovable one, I was the clever one, and I was in the food too much to be able to appreciate what a fantastic person he is. I do now. We now have a very good relationship. I made amends to my father, which proved very useful later on, though. Come on to that bit. So on I went, and I thought, I got it. Yeah, fantastic. Right, I'm there. And I did have a spiritual awakening. I started to get a relationship with a higher power. I was constantly looking, though, for that something. And as I said, I was very jealous of everybody else's recovery. So I was looking for a white light spiritual experience, which I've never had. I do tend to think that if I'd ever seen a burning bush anywhere around, I probably would have put a fire extinguisher on it and not recognized it in the first anyway. I got complacent. Honestly, that's what happened. I got complacent and I stopped doing those things every day that were keeping me well. I kind of thought that it was all right for me to eat this and eat that, and that time I slid into relapse. The one thing I can say in all 30 years that I have really, I'm pleased that I managed to do and have consistently done is I kept coming back. I never actually left. And if anybody here is feeling like they just can't get out of it and they're in relapse and it's never going to end, please, please, please just keep coming back. Because it took me months. It felt like it took ages and ages and ages, but I got back. I crawled back. And recovery was waiting for me. Recovery was still here for me. And I found another sponsor. I think one of the things that had been an issue in the relapse was that my first sponsor had moved away and couldn't sponsor me anymore, moved overseas. And this is the bit where I made the mistake was I didn't get another one. That was the mistake, not that he moved away. That's what I thought. Not at all. No, I didn't get another sponsor. A sponsorship's been hugely important. So I got another sponsor, started working the steps again, and it happened again, and that happened like kind of over the years, a couple of times. But the kind of the two relapses that I really wanted to talk about because they've been so meaningful for me was that the first one was it was a few years ago. No, when was it? It must have been about 2016, and I mentioned my beloved but very chaotic father and my beloved and very unchaotic brother. But my father became very ill from this disease. This particular disease and other manifestations of it, and he very suddenly needed a lot of care. So my brother and I helped him to get back to London, sorted him out, and we then cared for him between us. Well, actually, my brother did most of the caring, to be honest with you, because I had a son who's got lots and lots of additional needs, and so I had my hands full and a job and all the rest of it. But I always had a very tricky relationship with my dad, despite having making the amends, because he was absolutely beloved, but he was very, very, very much one of us. And it was very, I just found the whole thing really tricky. And then everything seemed to go wrong. My son was in a real state. Now, if anybody wants to hear about the details about, I don't know if we're allowed to mention other OA meetings, but there is a, if anyone has a child with additional needs, there's a fantastic specific focus group where you can hear all about the details of children for whom it's really hard to parent. I mean, it's hard to parent anyway. It's hard to parent when you're an adult. It's really hard to parent when you have a child with really strong additional needs. And that was going on. My job was falling over in a big heap. My father's care, even though I wasn't as, I mean, I was seeing him a lot, and I was finding that very, very difficult. And it was too much for me. It was too much for my relationship with my higher power. My relationship with my higher power was not strong enough. And I relapsed, and I got really, really, really depressed. And I hope this is not, I'm going to do a little bit of a trigger warning, because I did get to the stage of actually contemplating taking my own life quite seriously and working out exactly how I was going to do it. But I didn't, because you know what? I had the food. And this is why I say food sometimes works, because I retreated into addiction at that point. But it, you know, it was quite bad to the beginning. But what I kept doing, and again, can't emphasize enough, the only thing I did right kept coming back, kept coming back. And at that time, I was going to a meeting in the south of London, as it happens. And I just kept going. And they were just brilliant, because I was a mess and they were fine. And there was a woman there who basically said, she's quite kind of strict and boundary and kind of going, "Stop being a mess," she said. "Phone me instead." And she wrote her number on a piece of paper and she put it in my hand. And I put it in my pocket and just thought, "No, I can't do that. I'm a mess." And then a few days later, I was sitting in a park, and I had just got a big portion of my favorite binge food. And it was the biggest portion I could get that looked reasonable for one person to have. And I remember I was watching some people drinking alcohol who were straight drinkers, and they had the bottles in the packets. And that was when I got it, because there was I with my portion of this food in a packet, pretending I wasn't eating it. And it just really struck me. And I remember sitting there absolutely thinking, "Oh my God, they are me. I am them." And then this sort of thought, I could go and get another portion of this food. And somehow that, maybe this is the burning bush. This woman's phone number was in my hand. And I phoned her up and she became my sponsor, and that was fantastic. And I had, that was kind of how I kind of clawed my way out. This particular sponsorship was very, the sponsor was a, was of the no-nonsense variety. I had so many different kinds of sponsors, and they've been the people that I've needed at the time. So her method was like, "You need to follow this food plan, and you need to follow it exactly, and you need to report to me, and you need to do the steps really thoroughly." And I did, and we've had some very, very happy, for me anyway, I hope you're happy for her, years together. One of the problems was that unfortunately the food plan that she had suggested was fantastic for losing the weight, but actually meant that I was still eating some of my red foods, and also that I was eating the right amount to lose weight, but not to stop losing weight. So I got down to a weight that was right for me, and then kept on going. Because I just couldn't stop. I couldn't, my head is that kind of rigidity. I couldn't make a change. I just was too scared to do it. But I was finding a connection to a higher power, which was wonderful. And so I carried on for a few more years. And then it was actually 3 and a half, well, it was basically sort of August time-ish, August, September time, 4 years ago. And my son had a major, major mental health experience, and life in our household got incredibly difficult. I mean, very, very dramatic things. So he was taking lots of drugs. There was involvement in the police, and it ended up, very long story short, with him having to leave us. But he did that via hospital, and there was a very, very, very dark night when I was sitting, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning. There was just me and my son. He was asleep, which was really good. And I just felt so utterly alone. I mean, really, really alone. And there were snacks, because he eats snacks. And I ate some of those snacks because I felt so utterly alone, like there was nobody there. And then the next day I ate a few, and the next day I ate a few. And the thing about that relapse compared to the previous one is that was the relapse. It wasn't completely huge, but it was enough. I knew because I'd kept coming back, I knew it was getting more and more. I knew it was like a little bit the first day and a little bit plus the next day and a little bit plus the next day. And I knew where this was going. I had enough experience over all those years. And luckily, I was able to, it was actually online meetings at that stage to get to them. And again, did my throw myself into it, found myself another amazing sponsor who sadly passed away and got back. And the thing that I really, really learned from that relapse was that I had been wrong when I thought that I was alone. I wasn't alone. First of all, actually, do you know what? I do have a higher power that is always there. It's me who tends to wander off.
10 minutes.
Thank you. And second of all, there are all of you. Started there was when I first started in the 90s. There was half of the stuff that there is now. Even at 3 in the morning, first of all, I could have put her earphones on and I could have tuned into an actual meeting that would have been the other side of the world. I could have read stuff. I could have texted. I couldn't speak because my son was asleep. Fair enough. I could have texted. I mean, I had a huge God squad, but in that moment I didn't. And I realized that what it was, I needed a connection to my higher power. For me, the higher power is connection, and I cannot define it more than that. I've been looking so hard for going to be solid and concrete. That just hasn't been my way. What's been my way is to actually kind of bypass the intellect a bit and say, no, I need to be connected. That's what I need. And I just want to kind of, so that's kind of how I got. And that was, as I said, was it took me a while to properly get back. So my abstinence date is sort of November-ish, 3.5 years-ish years ago. I don't find counting days hugely, hugely helpful, to be honest, because I get so obsessive by figures and numbers. It's better for me personally to let go. So what's keeping me well has kept me well. First of all, one day at a time and keep coming back. I have no guarantee that I will be here tomorrow, not at all, but I have a lot of hope that I will be if I just keep doing the same thing. I should put down your note. So the first thing is that I reviewed my food plan, and what's working for me now is to really think, okay, what are my red foods? What do I need for my body? And I work with a sponsor to work that out. And that has really been helping me. And also to review it from time to time. Because, I'm getting older. Sadly, some of the physical manifestations of having had this disease for decades, for 60 odd years are starting to come. So, I have different nutritional needs. And then really handing it over, it's like, that's okay. Trying to accept it. Don't have to like it, but I do have to accept it. I have a routine. I have an absolute routine. I have routine prayers that I do in the morning. I have some calls that I do. I have a fantastic sponsor. I have absolutely wonderful sponsees who have so kept me sane and on the straight and narrow. For me, service has been a really big thing as well, mostly because it makes use, I think, of one of my besetting character defects of codependency and people pleasing, because I'm quite likely to, like last night, I didn't feel like going to a meeting because it was really hot, but I had a service position. And so I went, because not because really because I wanted to, but frankly, because I didn't want people to think badly of me. Do you know what? I'll take that. That's fine. I don't think it matters much. So service has been really, really important. And it's all part of that connection. So one day at a time. I'm not going to guarantee that I won't relapse again, but what I do know is that I've got things I can do every single day that mean I don't have to. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.